Okay, so lecture 8, Monday, September 26th, lecture notes pages 74. Happy Jewish New Year to our Jewish friends, students, family, and others in the world. We know about this. We know about this. We don't know about that. So mini test 3 closed on Saturday per schedule. Average score was 90%. 93% of the students took it, 97, 96, 93. I guess I should write to you more and remind you that it's coming, it's here, it's due again. I don't know what else to do. So averages overall are okay. Creating a cheer from my gentleman who really looks forward to anything having to do with Proctorio and proctoring. Proctorio's back. So I'm going to go back to the original plan. I'm going to use the lockdown browser without any recording of the session, which was my intent not to record it. Why do this? On the one hand, it makes me feel like I'm doing something about academic integrity. On the other hand, it does help you get ready for that proctored midterm and final exam, which are proctored, locked down, recorded. So I'm going to do it. Sorry. Enhanced Learning Extra Credit number 1 or 2 and Packback number 2 opened last Thursday. They're open until Wednesday. If you want points there, that's fine. Do it. As you can see, the score between the two are pretty similar, 0.27 on the Connect stuff, the Enhanced Learning Extra Credit, 0.30 on the Packback stuff. This seems to be, I go with whatever themes show up for me. Today seems the theme will be electric vehicles, which I know we've seen before, but they're in the news. So, business in the news. Electric vehicles took off. Car makers weren't ready for them to take off. A few years ago, auto executives weren't sure there would be enough buyers for plug-in electric models. Now, they worry they can't build them fast enough while they intensify a multi-billion dollar rush to accelerate timelines and bring factories online. So here's business reacting to changing in consumers' behavior. And it's always easy for me to say, hey, look out there, watch the trends, forecast what is going to happen, what it means for your consumers and what it means for your business. Easier said than done, especially with massive businesses like the car industry. EVs, electric vehicles, account for only about 6% of overall U.S. vehicle sales. So you'd say, why such a big deal? Why are they making a big deal about it? Well, that percentage has tripled over the last 2 years. So it's on a pretty good upward trend. And sales of other types of vehicles have declined. So we're seeing purchasing trends. Now, we can get into the side discussion. There aren't a lot of other vehicles available. The prices of those cars have gone up. But nonetheless, these are going up while sales of other types of cars have gone down. Also, federal and state tax breaks have helped to stoke consumer demand for electric vehicles. The recently signed law, dubbed the Inflation Reduction Act, extends until 2032. A $7,500 federal tax credit in place since 2009. It expands the availability of subsidy to some buyers while also imposing income and price caps to qualify, as well as domestic manufacturing requirements. So you have to qualify, the car has to be made in the U.S. Makers are also responding to tougher tailpipe emission standards globally. So if you're a global automaker, you're paying attention to those rules changes. And the influence of green conscious investors, people investing in companies wants you to be green. So here's the impact of political factors and social norms on consumers and on us, business marketers. The pressure's on automakers to grab EV market share early and narrow the gap with the front runner Tesla. Executives from GM, Ford, and VW have all said they believe they can pass Tesla. Not yet, you haven't. We'll see what happens next. So there's a bit of competition in the marketplace. Car companies find themselves behind in the supply-demand balance, in part because many lowballed early EV production volumes, hesitant to go big on a technology that carries skinnier profit margins than internal combustion vehicles. When EV demand took off during the pandemic, it caught many auto executives off guard. So you remember our example of managers looking out from their cubbyholes, looking out into the world, paying attention to the crest factors, paying attention to the technology changes like our friend Michael Scott did about computers and paper, and then ignoring what they see. Well, there's a real world example of them looking out, seeing it coming, and then saying, nah, let's not worry about it. Automakers found themselves hampered by insufficient supplies of critical parts. electric cars use more computer chips than internal combustion engine vehicles and are especially affected by chip shortages that has hobbled the U.S. auto industry. Batteries are another bottleneck for automakers straining to increase EV output. So we see supply chain issues. We see the effects of the pandemic on the supply chain and so on business. On the consumer side, hurdles to broader adoption include a lack of affordable EVs and availability of chargers. U.S. buyers paid about $66,000 for an electric vehicle on average in July, up 28% from a year ago. That ain't chump change. Until automakers bring the prices down, it will just be the so-called early adopters. We'll talk presently about consumers and the adoption process of new products. And these early adopters are folks who want the stuff, point of pride, I got it, and they can afford it. So these early adopters are those who can afford to buy EVs at those price points and who want to be the first on the block to drive one. So this is part of the new product adoption process. So on the same theme, just happened to pop up this week. Any BTS fans here? BTS? Anybody know what BTS is? Okay, well, thank you, thank you. Is that more of a younger crowds group? Those are some pretty boys, I gotta say. The BTS boys, they are pretty.
More of a international, like if you like international music, that's more of that thing.
Okay, more international, well, global. Hyundai and BTS just dropped a 2022 World Cup song. With the countdown to the World Cup 2022, how many people are focused on that at all? A few more than BTS, all right. BTS has been selected by FIFA sponsor Hyundai to promote its goal of the century sustainability campaign, socially responsible marketing, which is using the momentum around the Qatar soccer tournament to drive awareness of its carbon neutral strategy. So we're seeing sustainability marketing, use of celebrities, getting consumers' attention to build awareness, sports sponsorship at work in marketing. As part of the initiative, BTS has re-recorded a British Rocks remix of their hit Yet to Come to galvanize young people to unite toward one goal of sustainability ahead of the November 20 kickoff. A one-minute preview of the full track launched with updated lyrics that reflect Hyundai's campaign message. So here's their campaign message strategy, their target audience, and again, their use of celebrities.
Yet to come. We're going straight to the stars. They never thought we'd make it this far.
The moment is yet to come.
And now the vision is clear. The goal of the century is here.
Yet to come.
We're gonna touch the sky for the day we die.
The moment is yet to come.
And now we're ready to fly. The best yet to come.
So the goal of the century. The additions to the redubbed yet to come Hyundai version are apt since the anthem will serve as the goal of the century campaign song sponsored by the car company. As one of the most influential global artists in the world, BTS and their music greatly influence our society to help develop in a positive direction. Through the World Cup campaign with BTS, we hope to create an opportunity for people all over the world to unite towards one goal of sustainability and cheer each other up. So the campaign message, celebrities in marketing. To capitalize on BTS's huge social following, but not in our room. Webbies, you like BTS at all? The brand will also launch a TikTok dance challenge globally based around the goal of the century principles. So we're seeing the use of social media marketing, and again, back to global marketing. The South Korean car maker has been tying its World Cup sponsorship to sustainability goals since April, announcing the strategy in tandem with a mission to achieve carbon neutrality by 2045 at all stages of its production and operation. So I popped up our UN goal, which we talked about last time, number 12, responsible consumption and production, so feeding into that perhaps. In line with the campaign message, Hyundai plans to provide eco-friendly vehicles for national teams, VIPs, and event officials during the FIFA World Cup. the first time such vehicles will be included in the official event fleet. So getting some mileage out of that upcoming sporting events. Finally, Starbucks. This is an interesting view of how you can forecast the future, and it's going to go against the current trend, and you still feel like you're doing the right thing. We'll see if it works for them. Starbucks plans 3,000 new China stores despite sinking sales from COVID policies. Starbucks Corp. plans to increase its China store count by 50% over the next 3 years, a vote of confidence in its largest market outside the U.S., despite COVID lockdowns and weaker consumer spending that has damaged its sales recently. So global marketing strategy, corporate growth strategy, we're going to do market penetration, if you recall, selling more of our product to existing customers. Starbucks set a China store target of 9,000 by 2025. Starbucks executives expressed optimism that the COVID-driven downturn would be temporary, adding they expect a jump in sales next year as sales rebound from a depressed 2022 levels. So forecasting demand and building policy on your market forecasts. Coffee is emerging as the choice of beverage for the younger consumers in China. I don't know, stereotypically, if I'd asked before we had this story up, and I said, what do you imagine that Chinese population likes to drink for a beverage? You might have said, I don't know what comes to your mind, tea, which is sort of that stereotypical idea of tea from China, et cetera. But coffee is the up-and-coming drink. And we're positioned to capture share, says Interim CEO Howard Schultz. We're investing now for the long-term growth aspects of the country, so reacting to changing consumer norms with your marketing strategy. Starbucks generated 13% of its fiscal 2021 revenue from China, making that country its largest market outside the U.S. So a bit about global marketing and, again, their strategy and where they're having success. Starbucks also faces challenges from a host of local and regional competitors. When we talk about global, we will talk about that question. You're all hot to go to a global market. You're ready to be there. They've been there a long time without you. What's the local competition look like? And why would anybody buy your product in their home country? So they are facing that. Its biggest is Luckin Coffee, the once scandal-plagued Chinese coffee chain that is in the midst of a turnaround effort. It also faces competition from lower-priced brands such as Manor Coffee. So understanding local competition in the global market is important. Both Luckin and Starbucks are quite ambitious about their expansion plans, especially in lower-tier cities. Major coffee brands already have a large presence in China's largest cities like Beijing and Shanghai. The competition is very fierce between those leading brands. So global competition, Starbucks making plans in the face of depressed sales for future growth. We'll have to see what happens. So we pick up with lecture notes, page 74 and page 126 in the textbook, thinking about understanding consumer behavior. It's pretty hard to satisfy consumer needs, wants, and desires with a marketing effort if you don't understand the consumer. And so we said we're using the modification of the Engel-Colton-Blackwell model of consumer behavior. We said we start by thinking about these five stages of the decision process. Problem recognition, I got a need that's not satisfied. There's a gap. Searching for a solution to that problem, evaluating the possible things that we came up with, choosing one, buying value, buying something to solve my need, and the outcomes of that process. Did I get value from the product as I consumed it, as I used it or not? And so I said each of these are fairly complicated to understand, but fairly important for marketers to understand. So we start with this idea of problem recognition. This is the idea that your current state doesn't match your ideal state. Currently, you don't have whatever you need, want, or desire, right? So where do these things come from, these needs for problems? So there's a perception that there's a difference between the ideal situation and the desired situation. Anybody miss lunch today and getting a little hungry? Anybody? Yeah, you were just talking about that, were you, and how you're getting hungry. And did I need to mention that for you to think of it? Did I need to show you an ad for food for you to think of it? So you thought of it all by yourself. Amazing. So one place where we recognize that we have problems is from our internal motives, our internal need state. I don't have to remind her that she missed lunch and it'd be nice to have a nice, delicious, I don't know what she likes, trying to make her hungrier, because it's internal. So you do have problems, needs, wants, desires that come from you internally. Marketers have to be aware of that, of course. And, of course, they also come from, thank goodness since we're in marketing, firms. Firms, organizations, marketers that can activate problem recognition through marketing communications. Marketing communications that do things like highlight the limitations of your currently owned product, for example. So, hey, here's what your current product has problems with, doesn't work well. You own a Windows PC. Windows PC have blue screens of death, and they don't work with Apple products, and so you have a sucky PC product. Or, well, I guess that's limitations of competitive products. That would be we're Apple, and not only do PCs not do well, but those Samsung smartphones are no good either. This is an absolutely true story. It's an older ad, as you'll see. The punchline of this ad is print from any room or age in the house. Live wirelessly, print wirelessly. Anybody old enough to have had a printer at home that in order for it to work, the PC in the room had to be turned on? Anybody have? A whole bunch of you had that. I had kids at home. They were younger kids. They were still at home. And every time somebody wanted to print, I had to go upstairs and turn on the darn office computer. And I'm grumbling about that. It's a problem that I knew I had. This ad I've been showing for a while. And finally, one day, I turned around and said, dang, there's a solution to my problem. Get a wireless printer. Now, of course, it sounds stupid now, but I literally hadn't thought of it. I had the problem and hadn't recognized that that was the solution. So I now do have my HP, go Flashes, I now have my HP wireless HP printer at home, which solved my problem. Literally reminded of it by an ad I was showing. All right, so we're going to recognize that we have a problem. Let me see if I made my whole point here. I'm not sure I did. So the other place that problems can come from is this idea of memory, of marketers reminding us of stuff that we wanted. We saw an ad, we heard a message, we saw something on the web, we saw a social media site, we heard from somebody else, and we're remembering that, oh, gee, we wanted to try that thing. So there's these two sides, our internal motives and external stimuli, such as marketing, such as other people. So now we're going to search for a solution to our problem. Anybody do their own grocery shopping, home shopping stuff? Anybody buy toothpaste recently? Toothpaste. So do you remember the brand that you bought? Can you yell it out? Colgate toothpaste. So is that your usual brand? So here you are, you're running low. I presume you didn't just do it randomly. I presume you're running low on Colgate, right? So, gee, I need some toothpaste. How much time did you spend in the store? Because there's a lot of toothpaste on the shelf, man. Going through the toothpaste, checking for their ingredients, seeing whether or not they were approved by the American Dental Association, see what people recommended. How much time did you spend doing that? Zero time. So one place we look for a solution to our problem is memory. And for a lot of products, we just know what we want. We spend almost no time actually searching. So we do an internal search of memory. What sorts of things do we recall? We recall the brand name, Colgate. Anybody go to the grocery store, and you can't quite remember the name of the product, but you know it's over there in the back row, and you can sort of picture the image of the product, and when you say, that's the one I want, you ever do that? That's why I hate shopping in a new grocery store. I don't know where anything is. So we might picture the imagery, which is why marketers may spend a lot of time building the imagery, the color, the character, so you remember it when you go to the store. And so that will be one set of things that come to us, just remembering. Or we might have external search from marketer-dominated stimuli. We actually go to the marketer's websites, we go to the marketer's brochures, we go to the store, and we talk to somebody about the particular product, or other sorts of things like personal sources. Did you ever ask somebody about what music they're listening to, what restaurant to go to, what movie is good, what car they're driving, what fashion they're wearing? Of course, you talk to other people. And you might go to public sources of information. So you might go to Consumer Reports or Better Business Bureau for information to solve your problem. So external search includes marketer-dominated sources, salespeople, websites, ads, catalogs. It includes personal sources, your friends, whether that's your little immediate friends or it could be the extended friends you have in your social media network. And public sources, consumer reports, government agencies, etc. So we have a problem. We're head scratching on it. We don't know the answer. Sometimes we might know the answer 5 years ago. The last time I bought a wireless printer was 5 years ago. Is there anything new in wireless printers? Is there a new ink supply? Is there a new speed? I don't know. Is there a new brand out there? I don't know. So sometimes what I used to know was good information is no longer good information. Fortunately, Colgate's still Colgate, but you wouldn't want to do that every time you had to buy toothpaste. But other things you may actually have to go out, even though you knew it before. You don't know the brands, the characteristics now. So you're going to go out and search around. Shane Dutka, as you may recall from a long time ago, I guess we saw him one time, is an affiliate marketer. An affiliate marketer is going to go out, review products, put up information about products on their website. You can read about the quality of the products. If you click on one of the things they recommend, they get a portion of the sale. So let's hear about how an affiliate marketer can provide information about possible solutions to help you solve your problem.
As an affiliate marketer, we add value in the process of buying something via education. What happens is, if people want to buy something, they have a problem. Man, my back really hurts, you know, like, best way to get rid of back pain. What happens is they'll Google that, they'll find affiliates who will then educate them on which direction they need to go in. As an affiliate, I would present a blog post or some kind of piece of content to educate that person about the three solutions to their back pain, and each one of them might have an affiliate link, which to go to a product, maybe a back brace, and that's how I would make money and basically be a part of that sales cycle.
Of people out there, they're looking for a problem. Think how different that is in affiliate marketing than you having to go find somebody and remind them of a problem, tell them a problem, and then sell them on your solution. These are people that have a problem, and they're actively looking to get information, but to make a purchase. I think eventually Shane will tell us his original company was bow ties. He actually had a bow tie affiliate marketing company. That one said, well, he sold that out. Bizarrely, got my kid involved in HVAC, which my kid knows almost nothing about. But he was one of the top affiliate marketing sites for HVAC something stuff for a while. And after you got the thing set up, it was just rolling in small amounts of money without a lot of attention. Affiliate marketing, helping people to find solutions to their problems because they're already looking for it. Very cool.
As an affiliate marketer.
Yes, yes. So we recognize we have a problem. We're looking for a solution. We're looking around among various alternatives. We find a bunch of possible alternatives. Sometimes, again, it's instantaneous. Colgate, I don't need a bunch of searches. Back pain. Do I use a brace? Do I use a salve? As I said, wireless printers. So how do we decide which of the possible options to choose? Well, presumably, we have a set of what we call evaluative criteria. Things that you believe would help you solve your problem best. So these are the factors that represent the brand's characteristics as you perceive them, might or might not be right. And they're the things that you use to compare and evaluate the possible brand choices. Could be a variety of things. It could be in a modem, it could be, you know, speed of the modem, how many devices it can run simultaneously, its security system, how much it costs. And those might be evaluative criteria that you're trying to compare various choices on. Sometimes you know the evaluative criteria. Sometimes you're trying to discover what the evaluative criteria are. I don't even know that. So part of your search is to discover those criteria. So marketers attempt to understand what your evaluative criteria are for their product and against competition, and then influence you on what they believe are the important criteria so that you'll choose their brand instead of someone else, instead of the competition.
Oh no, here we go again. Oh dear, I need a little help here. I'm sorry, I don't have a USB port. Oh snap. You have a real keyboard too? This isn't going to end well for me, is it? Nope, definitely not ending well. Do you still think I'm pretty?
Now, whether or not Windows ever sold more than Apple iPads did, that's not the point. Apple has a set of evaluative criteria that they believe consumers would find important. USB port, we got it, they don't. Actual keyboard attached, we have it, they don't. I forget what else they had. Price, we're less expensive than they are. If those are your evaluative criteria, you're liable to be swayed to get a Windows a device rather than an iPad, right? They're working with those evaluative criteria. In the COVID-19 era, as social distance and protective measures became the new norm, shopping from home became a criteria for people making purchases. So shopping from home, being safe, being convenient, all became evaluative criteria for a lot of purchase decisions. For many marketers, this meant rethinking how to connect with their consumers. Clearly, a stronger emphasis on e-commerce and digital channels became crucial, including consideration of the role of direct-to-consumer e-channel commerce, e-commerce channel. So that really pushed things along for those folks. So, consumers use their evaluative criteria to compare the alternatives in their consideration set. I'll explain that in a minute. In their consideration set. This is also called the evoked set. And that's what they're comparing using these evaluative criteria. So what is this consideration set or the evoked set? Well, consumers' search for information should result in a group of brands, several brands. Again, if this is an important decision, it's not just Colgate toothpaste is what I want. It's more thoughtful, risky, complex. Brands that a consumer actually considers buying before making a purchase decision are known as the evoked set of brands or the consideration set. Given my search, these so far are my most preferred alternatives. So here's all brands that are out there. How likely are you going to consider or buy a brand you've never heard of?
Not likely.
Thank you. Not likely at all. Zero. So there are a set of brands out there that we just don't know about. So we're not going to consider buying them. All right. So now, what about the known brands? Well, of the known brands, we have one group that's just unacceptable. I've thought about these. I know what their price points are. I know what their characteristics are. I'm not going to buy them. There's another group over here, we might say the acceptable set. And then we have the overlooked brands. You all know the V8 juice drink. And what's their theme always? Bonk. I could have had a V8. They find that people, when they think about beverages, like the idea of V8, but they're constantly forgetting about it. They constantly overlook it for some reason. And so they're always fighting this idea of people forgetting their brand.
Look what Mommy's having. Mommy's having a french fry. Yes, she is. Yes, she is.
Could have had a V8. 100% vegetable juice. With 3 of your daily vegetable servings in every little bottle.
Sound familiar at all? They're trying to remind people, hey, consider me too. Remember me as a possible snack alternative, as a possible beverage alternative. So we have all known brands. Some we don't know. We aren't going to consider. Some are known. Of the known brands, some we overlook. Some are unacceptable. And then the evoked set are the acceptable brands that we're considering. Of those, we're really going to evaluate them on our evaluative criteria. Choose one, reject the others. Your goal, of course, is to be the purchased brand. If you're not, your goal is to understand why they chose the competition. What were the criteria that they used to get to the competition instead of choosing you? So evaluative criteria involve beliefs about the brand and their characteristics, whether or not they're accurate or true. I believe that Apple is. I believe that Tesla is. These are beliefs you have. And these form attitudes, liking or disliking, for the brand. So as you evaluate the brands, you form beliefs about those brands and either favorable or unfavorable attitudes about those same brands. So as marketers, we need to know, what do people believe to be true about our brand? Sometimes what they believe to be true is true. Sometimes what they believe to be true isn't true. And it's important to know which is which. And then they form attitudes based on those beliefs that are either favorable or unfavorable. The result of this process, then, is an intention to make a purchase, including which brand to buy, where to buy it, when to buy it, how to pay for it. And, you know, there are brand managers throughout the country really worried about these issues for their particular brand. If our consumer actually acts on their behavioral intention, they make the purchase. They buy that thing that they think is going to cure their problem, fix their issue. So they're buying value. Based on what? Based on their beliefs, based on their attitudes, based on their assessment of the various choices that are out there. This is the one for me. Is it always the one for them? Sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't. All right? So then we move to the idea of outcomes of choice. And what I say for the outcomes of choice is, it's not so much being satisfied or unsatisfied. So I say that, look, there's some level of satisfaction. But almost every purchase you make of any consequence is also some dissonance. You ever make that purchase and wonder, was that really the best one? Should I have gotten that shirt? That car? Gone to that restaurant? That move? So when you make that purchase, there's some level of dissonance and some level of satisfaction. So consumers make purchases, choice based on their evaluations of the brands, based on their purchase intentions. They then evaluate whether their choice did what? Well, fulfilled their need, provided the value they wanted, closed the gap between the ideal state and the existing state. Consumer satisfaction, well, let me tell a little story about consumer satisfaction. There was a company in Michigan that had a blueberry muffin mix, and they decided that they would try to improve the product quality for their blueberry muffins. So they go out and they create a new formula, another new formula, and they test it on consumers to see what they think. They like it. They test it against the existing competition, the existing brand, the new brand in blind taste tests so people don't know what brand they're trying. The new mix wins. The new mix features fresh picked Michigan blueberries, which in this region is a thing. They create ads showing people buying the new blueberry muffin mix, mixing it up, serving it to the family. People are practically drooling. It's fantastic. They love it. And they like their blind taste test better than the existing brand, mix, better than the competition. They go out, and initial sales are great, and then they fall off. It's just as easy to make. It's priced about the same. People love it in blind taste tests. Why would sales have dropped off? There's no reason you know, but I'm just throwing it out. Why would sales drop off after the initial purchase? What's your guess? Nope, the blueberries were blueberries. That was not it, but again, so there's no reason you know this, but yeah, what do you think? Used to buying a different kind of mix? Mix was the same process of going through it. Good guesses, though. One other guess. Nothing else is a guess. Nope, it was priced pretty much the same. What people said, and mind you, this is what I'm going to tell you is true, despite the fact that in a blind taste test, they preferred the new one over the other. They said they were dissatisfied. They bought it, they made it up, they were dissatisfied. How could you be dissatisfied? They said, well, it didn't taste as good as your advertising made it look. It didn't taste as good as your advertising made it look. So what we say is that consumer satisfaction is a function of the consumer's expectations. Who set the expectations in this example? Who set those expectations? The marketer, the advertiser, the commercial. We set those expectations and a function of the consumer's perceptions of the product's performance. Blind taste test, you preferred this one. But given the expectations you set, my perception of the product's performance is it wasn't as good as you made it look. So I'm dissatisfied. So if perceived, not objective, perceived performance is below expectations, consumers are dissatisfied. You ever have somebody tell you what a outstanding movie, book, or restaurant you're going to go see, eat at, read, and you go there, and it's good, but you wouldn't say it was outstanding? Are you somewhat disappointed compared to maybe if you've just seen it on your own? So, if perceived performance is below expectations, set by, in this case, by your friend or by the marketer, you're dissatisfied. If perceived performance equals expectations, it's as good as they said it would be in your mind, you're satisfied, all's good. And if you can ever hit that sweet spot where the perceived performance is greater than expectations, your consumers are delighted. And here's the J.D. Power Award for customer satisfaction. Good job. But this means you have to really understand what the expectations are that you're setting for that consumer in your advertising, your salespeople, your brochures, your website. And then you have to really understand their perception of the result of buying the product. So marketers should only promise what their brand can deliver. Otherwise, you're going to disappoint the consumer. They're going to be dissatisfied. And dissatisfied customers don't come back. Sometimes you have marketers who slightly understate some aspect or element of their product performance. Because then when it does better than expected on that feature, consumers are really satisfied. This works in the opposite direction. Sometimes, I don't know about the legal issues of what I'm going to say, but if you go into a repair shop for your car and they give you an estimate, now it might be that they can't exceed the estimate by some dollar amount legally, but if they give you an estimate and they're over that, you're pretty unhappy. If you give an estimate and they're under it by 20, 50, or 100 bucks, whoa, you feel pretty good. So they might be tempted to set the estimate as high as they can, so they come in under, you feel pretty good. So it's the opposite of understating the product performance, they're overstating the estimate has the same effect. So the outcomes of choice are some level of satisfaction, dissatisfaction, satisfied, delighted. And also, for any purchase of any consequence, some level of cognitive dissonance. This is the feeling of anxiety that you experience when you have to choose among attractive alternatives. Now, did you have a lot of dissonance in buying Colgate? Probably not. You know the brand, it's familiar, it's habitual. That's not so much what I'm talking about. But you go buy that expensive shirt, that expensive coat, the car. You're just curious, should have I bought that other one? And it can occur regardless of your level of satisfaction. Might I have been more satisfied? Maybe I should have bought the Hyundai instead of the Toyota. So marketers help to minimize dissonance by reassuring consumers they made the right choice and minimizing the potential for product misuse through product literature and instructions. You've bought a new iron and you see the instructions say, do not iron clothes while still on body. See, you'd be dissatisfied if you did that. And I've actually seen instructions like that. When my daughter was still at home and my wife and daughter would go up to Beechwood Mall and go into the Coach place and buy a handbag. Have you ever heard of Kohl's? Kohl's also sells handbags. Coach handbag, they get a nice handwritten note, congratulations on buying one of the finest handbags in the world. In case you were concerned, you could have bought one at Kohl's. My daughter and wife were not concerned they could buy one at Kohl's. But hypothetically, they're reassuring you that you did the right thing. By offering mechanism for lodging complaints, 800 phone numbers, web forums where you can go and register a complaint. So here's Walmart offering the opportunity to go back and talk about the problems that you had. Makes you feel better about any issues that you might have had. Of course, they have to be responsive to those problems and be responsive to any questions that are being asked. So we know you may be dissonant. We want to do what we can in advance to reduce that dissonance. Consumers are not all equally involved in all purchases. So we find that there is a relationship between how much effort they're willing to put in and how involved they are in the whole thing. So for some things, we say they're routine. The problem solving is routine. How much involvement do people have in these compared to other things? They're very involved. How much time do they spend? Not much, because it's routine. Didn't spend much time on the Colgate decision? I know the answer. What's the cost? Usually you don't think that way about buying houses, cars, and boats, right? It's about a low-cost item. Information search, where'd you have to search for your information about Colgate? In my head, in my mind. And how many alternatives do you really choose? Just one. Now you go to the store and there's no Colgate there, that might bring up a whole other decision set, but Colgate was there. So that's the idea for all these grocery type products. You buy them regularly, you know what they are, there's not a lot of thought going into them. Limited problem solving. You're more involved in that than you were in the routine problem solving situation. So you're moderately involved. The consideration time, short to moderate. The costs can be low to moderate. Information search is mostly internal, but you might go to a website. You might go to a store to check things out, which is important for the marketer to know. And you might consider a few alternatives. Suppose you're changing from your dorm room to your first apartment. You want a little microwave oven. What do you really know about microwaves? Not that much. I mean, buying it might be a $100 mistake, I suppose, for a little one, but maybe you don't want to waste $100. I'll go check out a few things. I'll go see what consumers say or consumer reports say. I'll spend a little time on that. And then sometimes consumers are highly involved in what's going on. They do a lot of search. So the time to buy the product is long. The costs are high. They don't want to make a mistake. They go on both what they know internally and what they learn externally from salespeople, friends, marketers, ads, etc., and they may start with many alternatives and come down to the one they want. So maybe an expensive sports car of some kind. Maybe you start broadly and work your way down to the one for you. Marketers need to know that. How much effort should they put into all those details for the FAQs and for the questions and answers and for the customer reviews? How involved are the people in the decision-making process? Then there's a series of psychological influences. Remember me saying there's different categories of these variables? Psychological influences on consumers' purchasing decisions that we have to understand. One of those is the idea of motivation. That hunger for your missed meal. That stimulate behavior to satisfy a need. Personality is another psychological influence. Their tendency to respond in a consistent way to particular situations. Perception is a psychological influence, the process by which people select, organize, and interpret the information to come up with what they believe to be true. Learning, these are behaviors that result from repeated experiences, experiences and from reasoning. Values, beliefs, and attitudes, we touched a little bit on those before. And lifestyle, how people live their lives also influence the sorts of things they buy. So here we are in our model. We see a bit about the sensory processes and perception. We see a bit about motives, beliefs, attitudes, lifestyle, and personality. So let's dig into this part of the model a little bit. Who's never seen Maslow's hierarchy before? Who's seen it 116 times before and this is the 117th time? Let me pause a little bit to point out why you see Maslow's hierarchy rather than other models. So originally when psychologists thought about this issue of motivation, they realized there were a bunch of different motives. But what they did was just categorize them into different groups. There was a group of motives and a group of motives and a group of motives. Maslow, and the reason we see him all the time, is the one who said, look, they're not just different, they're hierarchically different. At the baseline, the most important things are the physiological motives. The need for water, the need for food, the need for shelter, the need for oxygen. And until those are reasonably well fulfilled, you don't worry about safety, freedom from harm, financial security. And so if you've ever watched some of these Naked and Afraid shows, Survivor shows, whatever, these people go out and they're eating grubs and they're drinking unsafe water to survive. They aren't worried yet about safety issues. They just got to stay alive. Fortunately, most of us are not at that level of motivation. And then you don't worry so much about friendship, belongingness, and love until these lower levels are satisfied to some level. Same with personal needs and self-actualization. But marketers do know these exist and do create ads that appeal to these different types of motives.
It's endless shrimp at Red Lobster. Indulge in endless choices of your favorite shrimp, including new shrimp in a spicy Cajun butter sauce. It's endless shrimp, our best value of the year, now at Red Lobster.
If you like shrimp, I presume that might make you a little bit hungry and thinking about shrimp. So they're obviously appealing to that base level sort of motivation. Endless shrimp, yummy, down here is a physiological need. Safety needs, freedom from harm, financial security.
Buying a home is one of the biggest decisions you'll ever make. So when you take that big step, let Woodmen of the World take it with you. We'll be there to provide life insurance protection and financial security for you and your family, so that you can turn your house into a home and your dreams into reality. Woodmen of the World, with you through life.
Financial security for yourself, for your family, wow. Pretty direct appeal to that level of motivation. Social needs for friendship, belongingness, the opportunity you have and give love is another motivation.
A tear on a child's cheek. Tears of sadness. Tears of happiness. Tears of joy. Tears of love. Become a foster to adopt parent and be there to wipe a child's tear. Learn more about foster care and adoption with Summit County Children's Services by calling 330-379-1990.
The motive to give love. How sweet. How about personal needs? The need to have status in your group, be respected, for prestige. Marketers play on those ideas as well as they get your attention.
Introducing... It's what Mercedes-Benz has been doing since 1886. Introducing the world to the first automobile. Introducing over 100,000 patented breakthroughs. Introducing innovations in performance, safety, design, and pure driving pleasure. This year, our 130th to be exact, we're introducing an unprecedented array of coupes, sedans, SUVs, convertibles, and roadsters. Introducing the youngest, most dynamic lineup in the world, all from the car company that needs no introduction. Mercedes-Benz, the best or nothing.
Mercedes-Benz, like you, needs no introduction, and you deserve the best or nothing. That's the kind of guy you are, gal, you are. And finally, we have the idea of self-actualization needs, self-fulfillment, being the best that you can possibly be. And by the way, the reason that the pyramid goes like this is everybody has these baseline physiological needs. Not everybody gets up to be the best that they can be. This is an interesting play on that idea, be the best that you can be, self-actualization needs.
I faced one of the toughest challenges of my life right here. I couldn't swim. But I can still hear my drill instructor today.
Don't quit. If you quit now, you'll always quit in life. Go for it.
So I jumped in. Unsure, apprehensive, and scared out of my mind. But I came up a Marine.
The view
I think we can agree they're not playing on ideas of safety and freedom from harm in that motivation behind that advertisement. So marketers recognize that these things exist, and depending on their product and the target audience and the time period, they emphasize different motives in their advertisements. Personality. Personality is a person's pattern of traits that influence their behaviors. If a person is confident or dependent or fearful or sexual in their everyday life, the logic is that these same sorts of everyday life traits will influence them in their style of consumer decision making. And I don't know, can you think of people in your life that are confident, outgoing, introverted? I have a cousin who actually oddly lives in near Hollywood, California. Oh, darling, how are you? It's so good to see you. Kiss, kiss, kiss. Calm down, calm down. Anybody know somebody that exuberant, that sort of person? It's too much, but it's too much in their interactions, and it can play over to other things they do, their activities, what they buy, how they live their life. So your personality can certainly do that sort of thing. That's all I got? Okay, so your personality influences your everyday activities, can influence the sorts of things you buy. That seems odd. Perception. Perception is the process of receiving external stimuli, organizing that stimuli, and giving meaning to those stimuli detected by one of our five senses. Basic stuff here, the five senses are?
Sight,
hearing, touch, smell, taste. Well done. So all of those things are constantly impinging on us. How do we make sense out of what's happening? Interestingly, and when you think about it, it's obvious, but maybe at first you don't think about it, not everyone gets the same meaning from the same stimuli. Now, I'm a marketer. I've created this ad. Here's the ad. We all see the ad. We got the ad. I know what the ad says. You know what it says, right? No, he doesn't get the same thing that I... It's right there. He doesn't understand it the same way. Marketers certainly have to understand this. This is true because people selectively perceive stuff in their environment. So not everyone pays equally attention to everything in their environment. For example, hungry lady right now is paying attention to nothing in the environment, and other people are. That's okay. I'm just picking on you because I noticed it. Due to selective exposure. How many of you guys listen to country rock radio? Not a single person. How many guys listen to pop? How many guys listen to rock? How many guys never listen to pop? Never listen to rock? This isn't working out very well for me. Never listen to NPR. Okay, so now we got somebody who is not going to hear the message that I put out on NPR. NPR is widely exposed. Lots of people hear it. You're not hearing it. You choose not to expose yourself to that website, to that television show, to that sports event or venue, to that particular radio sorts of thing. So people selectively expose themselves to stuff. Selective comprehension. I understand there's something in the environment called technology, but it's not important. Selective retention. We got it, but we're just not going to remember it and act on it. So subliminal perception was a big topic among students for quite a while. Not so big today. I'll mention it to talk a little bit about it, but it's less interesting to people these days. But overall, selective perception is the process which we use to determine, quote, what to perceive. And it's due to this selective perception process. We may omit items in our environment, add to things in our environment that aren't actually there, or even change what we see, what we feel, or what we hear due to this selective process. So people do not get the same meaning, sense from identical stimuli, including ads. Now, selective perception doesn't happen all at once. It occurs in various stages, including selective exposure, selective comprehension, selective retention that we just talked about. So it's not one thing. It's made up of several things. So let's do a little experiment in perception. So we're going to do a little thing on male versus female differences in perception. Originally, when I first started sharing this, it hadn't been used elsewhere, and nobody else knew what was going on. If you know what's going on, don't yell it out to your next door neighbor. Let them figure out what's going on. It's a little bit of a fun thing to do. So don't tell the other person what's going on here if you've already seen it. So let's take a look at differences in perception between men and women. So if you, and I guess that's outdated, but you understand my point. Let's see what happens here. Oh, here we go. Yes.
This is an awareness test. How many passes does the team in white make?
Go!
Okay, ladies, how many answers, passes, excuse me, did the team in white make?
13.
Everyone thinks it's 13, no other number. 14. 13, 14, higher or lower? 13 or 14. Men, how many passes? 13. 11? Anybody higher than 13 or lower than 11? Okay. Well, interestingly, we didn't see that much difference between men and women, although we did see some variation within men and women. But actually, that's not the point at all. Who knows what I'm about to show you next? Who already knows it? Maybe about a third of the class. All right. Let's check out what I'm actually doing here.
The answer is 13. But did you see the moonwalking bear?
Okay, of those who did not know what's going on, because if you already know, it's not, there's no point in asking the question, but if, those who did not know what's going on, how many of you saw the moonwalking bear? How many people have no idea what I'm talking about? Okay, what I just did was, as you will gather, force your attention onto what? Passing the ball back and forth. When you're processing that information, you can't be processing everything else that's going on. You don't have that much mental capacity. At least most of us don't. And so I'm going to replay this for you. And by the way, when I get done, somebody still won't have seen the moonwalking bear. It happens, and that's just a perceptual thing. So this is the identical thing. Nothing's been changed. See if you see the moonwalking bear.
Go!
All right, so how many people that didn't see it before saw it now? Anybody still not see the moonwalking bear? Okay, I'll back up. There are several people that still haven't seen him. Let me back up one time. I'll show him to you, which is not the main point of the exercise, but he is there. So, oh, well, there he is right there. So, coming in. There he is. The bear, and off he goes. All right? So, now, this is actually a public service announcement out of England. It's easy to miss something you're not looking for. Look out for cyclists, which is a cute play on things. But it does make the point. Was there a moonwalking bear there? Did we all see it? Marketers put out stimuli all the time without checking on it. The thing is there. Objectively, whatever they're saying is there, and people don't see it. They don't get it. They don't perceive it for a variety of reasons. Yes, ma'am.
Is that also the same with, like, look out for motorcycles and, you know, look out for deer?
Well, the principle of not paying attention what you're not looking for, the bear in this case, motorcycles, people on bicycles, etc., is the same. Doesn't hurt to remind people, pay attention, look out for motorcyclists, right? But this sort of explains a little bit because your attention is, when you're driving, diverted maybe from looking around you. Here, diverted from the bear. So perception is not just a matter of seeing what's there. Now, we do have some other fun perception things that, when I first put them together, didn't know if they'd work at all. So how many people, and I never got this. This is so bizarre to me. I know the answer to this question. But let's see if you know the answer to this question. How many people see blue and black on that dress? Look around. How many people see white and gold on that dress?
Dude,
the answer... The answer is 100% white and gold, and I'm kidding, because that's what I literally see, and everybody else here thinks I'm goofing, but I'm not, but about two-thirds of us see, and I don't understand it, blue and black.
It's literally white and gold.
It's literally white and gold. How many people think it's literally blue and black? Look around. Perception is bizarre and fun here. Not so fun if you're a marketer who doesn't realize people perceive the identical stimuli differently. This other one is also fun. If it works for us, let's see if it does. What do you hear? Is it going to work for me?
Laurel. Laurel. Laurel.
Again, I know the answer.
Laurel. Laurel. Laurel.
I wasn't sure if this would translate into the classroom.
Laurel.
All right, all right.
Laurel.
So, how many people hear Yanny? Look around. How many people hear Laurel? The answer is, of course, Laurel, because that's what I'm hearing. And when I first did this with my wife, I thought she was jerking me around. Because it's so clear that it's saying, Laurel, it's ridiculous. How many people hear some distortion? It's not like clearly one or the other. Two, three people. How many people are clear on what they're hearing? Bizarre. People don't perceive stimuli in the same way. This, I'm told, has to do with the frequency that you hear at, and different people hear at different frequencies. I don't know, but I know clearly what they're saying, and apparently I'm wrong. Yes, sir?
There was also another one. It was like brainstorm and something else, but every time I read it and then played the video, I heard one or the other.
That can happen, too.
I bet if you replay the video and I read Laurel, I'll hear Laurel.
I will do that very quickly for you. We'll finish this one out and see if, now that you're looking, see if, what did you hear the first time? Say again? Can't hear. So what did you hear the first time?
I heard Yanny.
Yanny. So you think about Laurel and see if you hear Laurel. Let's see if it changes. Just out of, we'll run an experiment here. I'm just going to pick up in the middle. Let's see if it changes for you.
Laurel. 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 Laurel.
I'm convinced I know what it's saying. Did it change for you? No, it didn't change. Different experiment. Yes. Oops. Hold on. I got a little psych experiment here. Hold on. Yeah, yeah. It did change for you. You hear it differently.
Yeah, it's the one that I hear.
Okay. So that would be even more interesting from a marketing viewpoint. I don't know what the psychologist would say, because perhaps I could influence what you're hearing based on the information I focused you on. Hmm. Interesting. So some people did hear it differently. So I wasn't sure if that would carry into the classroom, because obviously it's got something to do with the frequencies that are there. It does. Web students, I don't know what you're hearing at all. All right, perception is pretty important. All right, selective exposure. Anybody work in a grocery store? Stocking or whatever? You work in a grocery store? How many items are on the shelves in a grocery store? More than 100? More than 1,000? More than 10,000? Maybe 20,000? Let's imagine you had to do your weekly grocery shopping. Let's imagine there was no such thing as selective exposure. You had to look at every object in front of you and determine whether or not it was something you would like. This is Colgate toothpaste. Do I want Colgate? Well, let me look over here. Well, this is Colgate toothpaste. Do I want Colgate toothpaste or not? Here's an, oh, this is, do you see my point? How long would it take you to do your weekly shopping? 2 years, right. You would never get done. Fortunately, that's not the way our minds work. You walk in the store, you probably didn't even notice the other toothpaste. Colgate, I'm done. I'm out of here, right? So from the variety of communications available to you, people choose to expose themselves to only some of these communications. They tend to view communications or ads that reaffirm their pre-existing ideas. Colgate's for me. And bolster their image of themselves and what they know to be true. I'm that kind of guy. There it is. I'm good. And we choose to not expose ourselves from contrary messages. And so we tend to ignore stuff that doesn't fit in with our global view, doesn't reaffirm our attitudes. Marketers, of course, have to find some way to break through these barriers to perception. And they do it in a variety of interesting ways. Let's see if these would get your attention, perhaps. So might that get your attention even if you weren't looking for a nail biter stopper? The little bag thing might get your attention, might break through your perceptual barriers. In addition, for example, and this is no surprise, but still, people rarely read web pages word by word. Instead, they scan the page. I think we all know that. None of us read a web page word by word, picking out individual words and sentences. But I'm a marketer. I put a lot of time and effort into this web page. I got a lot of information on there for you. What do you mean you're not going to read it all? What parts are you going to read? In research on how people read websites, it was found, and this is amazingly high to me, but okay, 79% of the test users always scanned, oh, I'm sorry, it's not as high as I think it would be, always scanned any new page they came by. 16% read it word for word. I'm surprised that 16% of consumers will read anything word for word, but okay, we'll note, just because you have it on your web page, on your website, people may not be paying attention to it. Selective comprehension. So you saw it. What do you take it to mean? This involves interpreting discrepant information that's out there so it's consistent with your beliefs and attitudes. It's been reported more than once that 80% of people who do not smoke believe there is a legitimate link between smoking and lung cancer, that has been proven. But there are smokers who will tell you that their grandma Matilda smoked 3 packs a day and she lived to 108 and all the rest of that is baloney. So only 52% of heavy smokers accept that link between smoking and lung cancer exists. How can that be? We selectively comprehend the information that's in front of us. Bad enough in the health field, also bad in the marketing field. All right, so I'm going to mess with you a little bit. You see what I'm doing is talking to you about perception, yeah? And I'm telling you, pay attention, because I'm going to trick you with these three well-known phrases. Don't yell out the answer if you see what I'm doing, because I'm going to ask you a question. If you can't see the things, let me know. But as long as you can see them, I'm going to show them to you. And I'm going to ask you to, well, actually, I'll tell you in a minute what I'm going to ask you to do. All right, so here are three sayings. You've probably heard of them before. I'll give you a little bit of time to read them. Shouldn't take that much time to remember what they are. Okay, so who can tell me what one of the things says?
Once in a lifetime.
That's not correct. Give me another one. Paris in the spring. That's not correct. Give me another one. Yeah. Oh, you got it. We aren't going to yell that out yet. What's the other one? The third, yeah. Uh-oh, you got the solution, all right? Anybody know what the third one was, by the way? Doesn't really matter. That's not the point. Here's the point. Not the first folks were not right. Why weren't they right? Because let's read it again. Somebody who said Paris in the spring? Who said that? Could you repeat it? Say it again. Oh, you see it now? Sometimes people don't see it now. Sometimes people still don't see it. Who still doesn't know what I'm talking about? You don't know what I'm talking about. So read the middle one to me, literally.
Once in a lifetime.
So literally, people don't get what's in front of them. Read it again, slower.
Oh.
Oh, okay. You got it? You look puzzled. Have you got what's going on? Okay. Oh, she just got it right now. I'm telling you, I'm going to fool you. I'm telling you the perceptual thing. And everyone doesn't get it right away. It's not that I'm making fun of your perception. I'm saying this is common. You put stuff in front of people, they don't get it. Seems like that would be a problem if you're a marketer. What if it was really important for me to make sure people saw the double words? What could I do if this was a ad of some kind and I knew people were having trouble? What could I do? Yo. I could make it bold. I could put it in color. I could italicize one. I could underline one, which would draw attention to them. I could put them in two different colors. Would we know it then? Of course. First, as a marketer, you have to understand not everybody sees things as they are. There are perceptual differences. Then you have to understand how consumers are seeing your ad and whether it's accurate or not. Then you have to ask yourself, what can I do to fix the problem if they're not getting it as you intend them to get it on some important feature? Whew. Okay, let's see. Here is a numerical one. Don't yell out the answer if you see it. How many people have found the mistake? How many people have not found the mistake? Have not? Who hasn't found it but isn't going to admit that they haven't found it? Okay, that's everybody else. All right? Somebody who found it, tell me the mistake. It's the what? Let me try one more time, because I think part of this trick is you want me to run back and forth across the room. What are you saying the answer is?
Can you find the
Oh, yes, you did get it. Look at the top line. Can you find the mistake? How many people didn't see that till right now? This is despite the fact I just showed you one with double words. And I knew that at least half of us wasn't going to get it, because they don't. Perception is interesting. Perception is interesting. Even if you can get people to get the message, they don't always retain it. They don't always remember it. So the idea of retention is the fact that people remember more accurately messages that are favorable to their self-image than to messages that are unfavorable. I always buy Colgate. I see an ad for Colgate. I'm in. I'm good. I mean, I don't have to study it, but it's good. I see an ad for Sensodyne. I'm not interested. It goes out. People remember the good things. They forget the bad in life. Also true in ads. Selective retention can reinforce your self-image. So marketers need to find out what resonates with you and then find ways to help consumers to retain whatever their message is. Old school would be jingles. They play a jingle over and over and over again, and maybe here in the store. Here we've got Oral-B as the toothbrush for you. Maybe you were used to Colgate toothbrushes, but here's what it'll be, and now they want to remind you in the ad, and there's the reminder in the store to help you retain. You wanted to try the Oral-B toothbrush. What can you do as a marketer to help them retain stuff? I think that's as far as we will get today. We'll do a selective perception. End of the material for mini test 4. Thank you.